You're listening to episode 55 of the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast, Vaccines and Aluminum Toxicity. Prosper, flourish, bloom with your people, your close-knit group, your clan, straight out of area code 419, with the most cutting-edge, controversial, and enlightening information from the most knowledgeable experts in everything, mind, body, and soul. Welcome to the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast. I'm your host, Rose Hollow.
I'd like to thank our sponsor, Deep Roots Wellness, a holistic approach to mental wellness. If you'd like to know more about Deep Roots Wellness, located in Defiance, Ohio, you can find Deep Roots Wellness on Instagram, on Facebook page, or you can go to www.matthollow.com. That's MATTHOLLO.com. Hey everyone, how are you doing? I am recording this podcast episode on a beautiful, kind of spring-like day, dare I say it? I don't want to jinx it, but it's sunny and it's in the 40s and the snow's melting, so I think that's a good thing. So I'm feeling encouraged by that, and I hope you all are too. So before we get started with our podcast episode today, I want to go over some community events and classes that are taking place in the very near future. The first one is an online class that I'm doing in conjunction with Deep Roots Wellness. It's called Holistic Health Basics for Optimal Wellness. It's an online course, and we're currently taking applications to be part of this course. We're only going to select a few people for each cohort that we start. So if you're interested in taking a course like this, I think it's going to be about 7 weeks long, based all online. So you can take this no matter where you are. You don't have to drive anywhere. You don't have to go anywhere. You can be on the beach. You can be in the jungle, in the mountains, wherever. You can be in China if you want, and you can take part in this course. So if you're interested in learning more about it, just go to your email and send us a little interest in the course. And the email address is deeprootshelp@gmail.com. It's deeprootshelp@gmail.com. to get some information and see if this is a good fit for you and be placed on our waiting list so that we can let you know when the course is ready to get started. All right, this Saturday, March 9th, is spring cleaning, eliminating toxins from the body. The Weston A. Price Foundation Northwest Ohio chapter is presenting a workshop on Saturday, March 9th at 10:30 a.m. at St. John United Church of Christ, 950 Webster Street in Defiance, and that is the church on the Defiance College campus. So if you can find Defiance College campus, look for the big triangular wedge-shaped church, and it is in that building. You'll want to park in the parking lot on the north side of the building where the fellowship hall is and go in those doors. The program topic is spring cleaning this month, and it's a discussion of how and why to safely eliminate metabolic wastes and other toxins from the body. It's based on the work of Dr. Weston A. Price, a dentist who in the 1930s traveled the world asking, what do healthy primitive people, untouched by the foods of commerce, actually eat, and how does this affect their health? There will be plenty of opportunity to ask questions. Practical steps will be offered. The program will be led by Dr. Karen Like, board-certified clinical nutritionist and certified GAPS practitioner. This program is completely free. We do take free will donations if you would like to donate something, but it's free to come in and listen. And our workshops every month usually turn into a question and answer session, which is great. It's actually kind of fun that way. Let's see. Kids and nursing babies are completely welcome. We meet in a kid-friendly space with toys, and it's safe, so you're welcome to bring your kids along to that if you need to. And our location is handicapped accessible. And this monthly program takes place on the second Saturday of each month at 10:30 a.m. This program is supported and endorsed by Deep Roots Wellness, a holistic approach to mental health, and the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast. All right, something else really fun that we have coming up it's sort of an experimental art therapy series that we're doing, and we're calling it First Friday's Art Therapy. And this is also hosted by Deep Roots Wellness, and I'm going to be taking part in helping to teach this class. The first class is going to be Friday, April 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. Join us to learn basic meditation and make a watercolor mandala journal to take home. This class is appropriate for teens and adults. All art supplies are provided. This class is part of our Spring and Summer 2019 Art Therapy Series. And again, it's taught by me and my husband, Matt, who is a licensed professional clinical counselor. And this class is not meant to diagnose or treat any specific mental illness, but rather to teach you a mental health coping skill and to do a little bit of art therapy and have something to take home and work on at home as well. If you would like to register for this class, you can go to the Deep Roots Wellness website. It's www.matthollo.com, MATTHOLLO.com, and click on the events tab, and then you can register for the class there. The class does cost $30 per person, and again, that includes all art supplies and a project and new skills to take home. The class is taking place at the same place where all of our other events take place, at the St. John United Church of Christ at 950 Webster Street on the Defiance College campus. Hope to see some of you there. Then on May 18th is our big, big, big event, our second annual Holistic Health Fair, sponsored by us, this podcast, and St. John United Church of Christ as part of their new health ministry. Are you feeling stuck with your health? Explore some complementary and alternative ways to care for your mind, body, and spirit. Our second annual Holistic Health Fair will feature four parts: an early bird yoga class, a vendors area to learn about holistic service providers in our area and to purchase products, a classroom featuring several local Northwest Ohio experts speaking on various topics of mind, body, spirit, wellness. You can pop in and out of that as you desire, and a quiet healing arts room where a few providers will offer participants a chance to try a mini session of various types of healing arts provided by experienced and professional practitioners for a fee, and that's first come, first served. Tickets are $5 per person at the door. If you want to come for the early bird yoga at 9 a.m., the tickets are $10, and that covers the yoga class and admission to our fair. Kids 10 and under, yoga is $5. If you come at 10 o'clock for the fair, the entrance fee, general admission, is $5, and kids and under are free to come into that. We are handicapped accessible and disability friendly. Please let us know how we may accommodate your special needs. And if you'd like more information about what's going on at this Holistic Health Fair, we're constantly updating on the Facebook event page. So you have to go to Thrive Tribe 419 Podcast on Facebook and click on events, and you should see the Holistic Health Fair listed there, along with many, many other events that we are hosting or co-hosting this spring. And that's it for the community events for now. Again, if you need more information about any of these things, we are always updating our Facebook page. You can either look at Deep Roots Wellness or Thrive Tribe 419, and feel free to message us if you have any questions at any time. All right, so now we get to the meat and bones of this podcast episode, and I've been very excited to share this information with you. My husband and I had the pleasure of attending a health directions series in the Columbus area in December, And it was hosted by the Ohio Advocates for Medical Freedom, IPAC, which is an educational and scientific research foundation, and Health Freedom Ohio. And the keynote speaker at this event was Dr. James Lyons Weiler, PhD, and he was talking about avoiding metal toxicity in the age of aluminum. And I gotta tell you, this presentation that he gave was so jam-packed, full of information, and I was trying to take notes, and I did the best that I could to understand what he was saying, because I knew it was going to be hard to get him on this podcast, and that's true. I have not been able to reach him since that time, since I met him that night. I know he's very busy with his research institute and trying to raise funds to do the research that needs to be done on these really important topics. So I decided, per his encouragement, that I would attempt to share what I learned that night from him with you guys. So without further ado, I present myself trying to interpret what he taught us that night. I'm going to do the best that I can. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm just relaying information from what he provided us that night. So, Dr. Lyons Weiler, if you're listening to this someday and I screwed up, I'm so sorry. I would love to have you on the podcast to straighten out anything that I may have screwed up. If you would like to come on later, we would love to have you. But anyway, so he talked about diseases of mysterious origin, epidemics of chronic disease, autoimmunity, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, intestinal and digestive disorders, autism, ADHD, and what all these things have in common. According to his research, he's seeing that a lot of these have roots in aluminum exposure. And he's reviewed thousands of studies and evaluated the science that is supposed to show that aluminum in vaccines does not contribute to the risk of these conditions. But he is starting to share these three fundamental realities that he has found that are supported by the science out there. Number one, that population science fails to pick up on causality because it never tests the right hypothesis. Two, that animal models use doses of aluminum to induce some of these conditions on a routine basis in the lab setting. And that three, the total available scientific evidence does in fact overwhelmingly support enough of a causal link to take a precautionary action against the injection of aluminum into infants, pregnant women, and adults. He corrected some misconceptions about sources of aluminum that have been perpetuated by those that have stated that they don't want the public to know the truth. Now, on this podcast, we want to know the truth, and I am always in search of new information. Whether it agrees with my own ideas or not, I want to know the truth. And I hope that you guys do too, because sometimes the only way to improve upon ourselves is to know what's really going on and take the action necessary, right? Even if it's hard, and even if it's inconvenient, and even if it's not the popular opinion, that's what we want to do. That's why I'm doing this episode. So Dr. Lyons Weiler shared some research with us that pointed to some easy steps that we can take right now to reduce aluminum in our body, or reduce what they call the body burden by reducing exposure, and to carefully help our bodies excrete more aluminum stored in our bones, organs, and brain. So let's think about where we are right now in time as a society. Autism, for example. Doctors are throwing their hands up in the air. They're saying, we don't know what causes autism. I'm sure we've all heard that. Then there's another camp that says vaccines cause autism. Then there's another camp that says gluten and dairy cause autism. There's another camp that says, oh, genetics, it's all genetic. You know, we don't know. We don't know what causes autism. So let's just start with that. Okay. Also, the United States has the number one infant mortality death rate of any first world country. That is shocking. Why is this happening in our country? I thought that our medical system was supposed to be the best, if not one of the best in the world. Why is this happening? Our babies should not be dying. So, as I mentioned before, Dr. Lyons-Weiler has found that a lot of research done in the past has linked aluminum to many, many different conditions, including autism, maybe a precursor to autism as an environmental exposure, also possibly contributing to infant death. So how do we get exposed to aluminum? We can get it in antacids, in vaccines, in food, in water and air. So Dr. Lyons-Weiler did this, I'm looking at this research here in front of me, this sheet that was prepared in October of 2018, and claims exist that we're exposed to more aluminum from diet than from vaccines. It has already been established that this is not correct, and he references the study. In this informational flyer, using the limiting effect of intestinal absorption rates of about 0.3%. So let's say you're eating an antacid with aluminum in it. Your body, on average, is going to absorb 0.3% of the aluminum in that antacid. Like, not great, you know, you don't want aluminum in your body, but that's not very much. Okay, so now let's think about an injected form of aluminum. The research is showing, in 2010, there was a study done by someone named Yokel, that 100% of aluminum is absorbed from an injection. So when you're injected with aluminum, you have 100% of that in your body. It's absorbing all of that. Where in the antacid, if you're eating it, you're pooping it out. You're pooping most of the aluminum out, which is what you want to do, right? Well, if you're injected with it, it goes directly into your bloodstream. So it has a harder time getting out. It finds a place to settle. Aluminum amounts from diet are derived from Fanny et al. 2014. Data on aluminum content of vaccines are derived from vaccine manufacturers' resources, which they put in their pharmaceutical pamphlet, the vaccine insert. The number of exposures to aluminum via vaccines is determined by the CDC pediatric schedule. So, looking at this paper, he has these different graphs on here, and he's showing the amount of aluminum exposure in different things like breast milk, nutrition, you know, food, infant formula, soy-based formula, and vaccines. So the amount of aluminum in these things, of that list, soy-based formula has the most aluminum in it. Followed by infant formula, by food, followed by breast milk, and followed by vaccines. So vaccines actually have a very small amount of aluminum compared to even breast milk, but many kinds of food. But the metabolic exposure to that aluminum jumps up to a much higher amount when you look at the exposure for infants, the absorption rate for infants in the first 6 months of life. So in breast milk, the absorption rate is almost zero, followed by food, just normal nutrition, very low exposure. In infant formula, it goes up slightly. In soy-based formula, it goes up slightly. In vaccines, it goes up about 700%. So when you're absorbing this aluminum metabolically, your body is going to have a higher accumulation of this metal. So if you're interested in seeing this sheet that I'm referring to, you can go to ipacknowledge.org. It's ipacknowledge.org. And I believe it's on their website. So that was eye-opening for me. To know that even though the amount of aluminum in a vaccine is so small, which is limited by the CDC, you know, vaccine manufacturers are only allowed to put a very tiny amount in, the metabolic absorption rate is so much higher. So that's alarming, especially thinking about that small amount times how many vaccines does a child receive in their first year of their life, and into the second year, and into the third year, and then in their elementary school days, and their teenage years, and then into adulthood. That's a lot of aluminum exposure and accumulation. So it's no wonder that we are having reactions. The human body is having a reaction to these things. We've known for a long time that aluminum causes all kinds of things. Here are some examples of established pathophysiological effects of aluminum exposure, based on all kinds of different studies that have been done over the years. I'm seeing the years between 1995 and 2019. So these are all studies that have shown that aluminum toxicity is a precursor to these diseases. Impaired detoxification, glutathione depletion, and neonatal death, neurodevelopmental delays like delayed mental development and reduced synaptic plasticity, which is a brain issue, microgliosis, and autism. And then in the neurological cognitive category, aluminum has been directly linked to Alzheimer's. This stuff is not contested. This is out there, and conventional medicine is accepting these things. And you can find it all. All the studies are out there. Look on PubMed. In the gastrointestinal category, we have colitis. We have delayed healing. In the behavioral category, we have impaired sociality and reduced grip strength. In the immunological category, we have food allergies. We have autoimmunity and multiple sclerosis. In the reproductive category, we have delayed testes descent and primary ovarian failure. So boys and girls, young and old, this is affecting everybody. And these studies are not really contested. These have been found by the general medical community that these are acceptable, peer-reviewed, double-blind, good quality studies. So, you know, that's where we are right now. So to deny the link between vaccines and any of these things, I think at this point is hard to do, isn't it? Because the uptake, the storage of the aluminum in the body from an injection is so much higher than from food. Although, you know, you don't want to get it from food either. I mean, I really, after reading these things, I don't want any aluminum in my body. I, you know, looking at these things for me, in my own family, somebody in my family, either in my primary family or like first degree generation gap, has all of these things. We have all of these things in my family. So, you know, it makes you think. All right, so let's talk about autism a little bit for a minute. The autism prevalence right now, at 6 months of age, is about 1 in 59 children. And that's according to the DSM-4, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual that people like my husband use for diagnosing mental health disorders. If we had used the newest data, according to Dr. Lyons-Weiler, the newest data showing up, which is probably going to be in the DSM, the next edition of the DSM, they are going to bump it up to 1 in 29 children with autism. Here's the scary part. MIT researchers are estimating, projecting, that 1 in 2 children by the year 2026 are going to be diagnosed with autism. That's crazy. I mean, 1 in 2, that's half of our children. Going at this rate, by 2026, half of our children are going to have autism. My mind is blown. Aluminum and mercury, we didn't even talk about mercury yet, but mercury is in some vaccines still, disguised as other names, can cause the same damage as a traumatic brain injury. These metals injure microglia, which prevent proper neurological pruning and learning ability. The body thinks that there's tissue damaged, so repeat microgliosis is chronically activated. And kids with autism have this. They found that kids with autism have this repeated microgliosis, this chronic microgliosis, that they can't make synapses to basically help them learn. Okay, so there's that. There's the autism part of it. How about autoimmunity, like type 1 diabetes or multiple sclerosis? Now, of course, everybody knows, right? If you have studied science at all, or if you read memes on Facebook, you know that causation is not correlation. But why not do a randomized clinical trial to prove the theory that these vaccines aren't causing these problems? I mean, we need more clinical trials. I'm not doing this episode because I am anti-vaccine. I just want to throw that out there. Not once have I ever said that I am against vaccines in my life. As a vaccine-injured person, I have never said I'm against vaccines. I am pro-health. I am pro-informed consent. I am pro-pharmaceutical safety. I am pro people being held responsible for both the ways that they help people with their scientific breakthroughs and pharmaceuticals and surgeries and all these things. And I'm for people being held responsible for when they hurt other people through negligence. I feel that there is still some negligence when it comes to pharmaceutical companies educating our doctors, with our doctors not being educated about how to give informed consent about these things, because doctors don't even know about these studies. So that's all I'm saying. This, you know, I don't judge people. I'm a vaccine injured person. My parents vaccinated me. I don't blame them. I'm not judging them. I'm not judging any other parents who make the choice to do to vaccinate their children. You know, this is a very complex subject and it's a very touchy subject, and I'm not talking about this to be controversial. I'm just wanting to relay information that I found very fascinating and interesting as a person who was directly affected by an injury. So with that said, moving on. Okay, so there was a hepatitis B vaccination study done in France, and it saw corresponding increases of multiple sclerosis. And of course, then they were asking, what if it is the vaccine? You know, what if this is causing it? What if it is? We're allowed to ask that. It's okay to question. It's okay to be skeptical. It's okay to question the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies. It's okay. Doctors and pharmaceutical companies are not gods. They're here to help us, and we should hold them to that. If something doesn't feel right to us, or we're seeing these studies that don't sit quite right, we have the right to ask. It's not a bad thing. This is how science progresses forward, is by people questioning, by people asking questions. That's what a hypothesis is. It's asking a question and testing whether or not your hunch is correct. We can't move forward in our society if we don't question and we don't grow and we don't keep testing, right? This is what I'm about. This is what's important to me. And I hope it's important to those of you who are listening too, to hold those who are pushing these things accountable for what they're telling us. We want to know, we don't just want to know the benefits, we want to know the risks too. And we want to be able to make informed decisions for ourselves. We have the right to do that, and we have a responsibility to ourselves and to our families to keep ourselves and our children healthy, right? Nobody else cares about ourselves and our kids like we do, especially us parents. Nobody's ever going to. No doctor, no pharmaceutical company, no surgeon is ever going to care about our children like we do. So it's our job to ask these questions. Dr. Lyons-Weiler was saying that, I just want to throw this out there, that he is not saying that vaccines or metal toxicity is the only cause of autism or these other illnesses that he described. There are other things that can cause microgliosis. So he also is not claiming to be anti-vaccine. He's just informed consent and informed information, right? This is what it's about. So then he was talking about a 15-year-old boy who had so much aluminum in their body. He wanted to know where it's coming from, and he knows that it causes Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is caused by something called amyloid plaques, and they're part protein and part aluminum. And the autism brain also is heavy metal intoxicated. They found in some water poisoning from the UK that there was aluminum in the water from aluminum factories. And the people that consumed this water were getting encephalopathy, which is like a brain injury or inflammatory brain response. And they were the questioner or the people who were saying, oh, there's no problem there. You know, it's okay to have aluminum in the water. They're saying that, that wasn't the cause, that these symptoms were caused by something else. So, you know, then it goes back to the people. We can't just take it for granted and say, okay, these people know what they're talking about. What we need to know what caused it. If this isn't the cause of these things, we need to know what caused it. Dr. Lyons-Weiler said, autism is an acquired cellular detoxification deficiency syndrome with heterogeneous genetic predisposition. I'm going to repeat that again because those are some big words, but this is how he defines autism. Autism is an acquired cellular detoxification deficiency syndrome with heterogeneous genetic predisposition, which basically means that it's an epigenetic phenomenon. It can start with genes of many different origins, many different types of genes. There's no genetic test for autism. I've had people ask me that before because they know our family history and they say, I want to go get the genetic test for autism. Where did you get yours done? We've had genetic testing, but I can say that there are genes that came up that are known to be maybe put you at higher risk for autism, but there's no one gene that's been discovered that's like the autism gene. So what he's saying is that you can have one of many different genetic mutations that can cause a problem with being able to deal with toxification in the body in a healthy way and being able to flush it out, which on a cellular level, you know, is destroying your cells in your brain, all over your body. This is not a good thing to happen. So he's basically saying that even if you have the genes, it's going to take an environmental influencer to really turn on those genes or flip the switch for these things to start happening. So if you have the gene and you don't expose yourself, which of course, if you're born with it as a baby, so you're depending on your parents not to expose you to these things, and how do you know? But you don't want to be exposed to those environmental toxins that kind of send the signal to those genes to start doing things that you don't want to have happen as far as neurodevelopmental delays and things like that, if that makes any sense. This is so complicated. I'm really trying my best to convey what I learned, but I know it's really complicated. So what if your child was born with one of these genetic predispositions and they were exposed to some vaccines or some water? You know, we've got lead in our water these days and paint, and you know, we have mercury. You know, what if your child was exposed to some of these things and they're showing symptoms of developmental delay, neurological issues, autism, ADHD, autoimmunity, things like that. So basically, he was saying that kids have to be detoxed and detoxed safely, which seems to be something he was stressing very strongly. You want to be careful not to release too much at once to prevent any kind of distress. So something that was talked about at length by him and one of the other guests at this conference was how silica drops can be used. And silica evidently helps pull aluminum out of the body. You can do a patch test for aluminum sensitivity. And I believe if you get online and you go to a search engine, you can search for the aluminum sensitivity patch test. And it's by someone called Finn Chambers. Maybe that's two different names. Finn and Chambers. And this may even be billable to your insurance. So you might want to check with your doctor if you have a suspicion that maybe there's some aluminum toxicity in your body or in a child's body. You can see if this patch test would be covered by your insurance, if your doctor will get on board with you. Good luck with that. You may be able to also order it yourself and pay out of pocket. But the silica drops have been shown through a lot of case studies that they can help pull aluminum out of the body. So you want to do safe chelation. He suggested something called the Cutler protocol and DMSA chelates for mercury and aluminum, so that it helps to remove it from your body. So you want to do it with the Cutler protocol. So also use your search engine to look for Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R protocol. He said things like chlorella, spirulina, and vitamin C in the right doses are good chelators. But again, look up the Cutler protocol so you know that you're doing it correctly and that you're not doing it too fast. You also want to make sure that you're giving trace minerals while you are detoxifying. There's been another really interesting study on something called intranasal insulin. I had never heard of this before. But evidently intranasal insulin goes through the trigeminal nerves. I hope I said that right. Because there's something happens when there's a buildup of these metals in the brain and your brain becomes energy starved without this insulin. So the insulin goes right directly to the brain. And evidently there's no prescription needed for intranasal insulin. As with anything that is new to you and you're not familiar with it, you know, especially things like insulin, I would think that you would want to work with a doctor, maybe find a naturopathic doctor or an integrative doctor like Dr. Watts or Dr. Flaghar in Toledo. Somebody like that can really help you work with something like this, because I wouldn't want to mess with kids' blood sugar and insulin and things like that on my own. That's a little scary to me. But if it helps with detoxing, it might be worth a look for you. So I'm going to back up a little bit because I feel like there's a couple things that I missed and I want to relay those to you. There's something called ER stress that he talked about, and I had never heard of this either. Evidently, aluminum impairs proper protein folding, and ER, hyperstress, unfolded protein response, is something that happens with aluminum toxicity. You can look on his website again. I'm going to give you the website again if you would like it. It's ipacknowledge.org, ipacknowledge.org. And he talks about these. He has some graphs. There's something called the raw intake graph, and there's something called metabolic exposure on there too, which I talked about earlier. So go to his website to take a look at those if you would like to. And he really reiterated the fact that vaccines blow everything else away in the first 6 months of life for metabolic aluminum exposure. So those graphs help to illustrate that. Now, there are people out there, of course, that say, well, aluminum is a naturally occurring element in the earth. Why would it be harmful for us? You know, we've been living on the earth for thousands, millions of years now. You know, some people think we're living with the dinosaurs and aluminum has never hurt us until now. Why is that? That's because we really didn't start to refine aluminum until the 1880s. And it was done with absolutely no knowledge of safety. And aluminum was added to aspirin and antacids and supplements. And then, of course, you know, as things progressed in our modern day society, we, especially like us in the Midwest, we don't have citrus fruits that grow around here. So we're taking these antacids and everything, and then we're having these citrus fruits trucked in from other parts of the country. And the citrus is helping us absorb this aluminum into our bodies even better. So, I always think of Dr. Weston A. Price, the dentist that traveled around and looked at these indigenous cultures and how they ate and how they lived, and some of these indigenous cultures that ate traditional foods seasonally had really great jaws and teeth and really robust health. And, you know, things like this make me think of that. Like, we're in Northwest Ohio during the winter, we're not really eating local foods like our ancestors here did. We're eating things that are shipped in, and acidic foods are one of those, like citrus fruits. So something to keep in mind, you know, I'm kind of putting two and two together there, but, I wanted to share that. Now, something else that the Weston A. Price Foundation talks a lot about, and also GAPS practitioners, is leaky gut. And if you listen to this podcast regularly, you've probably heard me talk about leaky gut before, or heard a guest talk about leaky gut. Unfortunately, leaky gut increases the absorption of metals from food, including aluminum. And so, because it's not being flushed out, it's when it's in your intestines, it's going through these little holes and going right into your bloodstream. So it's kind of like an injection through the gut wall. So that's a concern. You know, you'd rather poop it out, right? But if your gut's leaky, who knows where it's going? Aluminum also depletes calcium, which is so funny because I know that there are certain antacids, like chewable antacids out there, that have aluminum and calcium in them. And now I wonder, like, because people say, like, I even had a doctor tell me one time to take one of those every day as a calcium supplement. And I said, but those have aluminum in them. And he was like, what? No, they don't. And I'm like, yeah, they do. Look on the box. Has aluminum in it, just like baking soda has aluminum in it, or baking powder. And he was like, no. And I came home and went to the grocery store and looked for like Tums or something that didn't have aluminum in it, and they all had aluminum in them. It says it right on the box. Are they putting the calcium in there to counteract the fact that aluminum draws calcium out of the body? I don't know. I think it's kind of strange. So on PubMed, you can find articles that say that fluoride and aluminum may have synergistic toxicity. Fluoride is another one of those contested, kind of controversial things. I think people and even municipalities now are becoming a lot more savvy to fluoride and how dangerous it is in these huge amounts. You know, we're getting there with that. I think that the people need to catch up with the research because the research is there. But fluoride and aluminum together, that's like really bad. So if you're if you have leaky gut and you're eating foods with aluminum and you're eating citrus fruits and you're eating acidic foods and you're drinking tap water, I mean, do you see where I'm kind of going with this? It's setting you up for disaster. And then of course the vaccines, which we already talked about. So again, and then we talked about genetics. So if you are predisposed to a genetic thing, like in our family, we have the MTHFR. We have one of the mutations. At least two of us have a homozygous mutation, which means we have two negative alleles for a SNP or a SNP called C677T, which is shown to be linked to a lot of health issues, unfortunately, not just autism. I don't want to say linked, but shown to be common in a lot of those health issues. So that's one of them. If you have an MTHFR mutation, I know that there are others. You can find this information online pretty easily on PubMed or greenmedinfo.com. And then there are genetic tests that you can have done by yourself if you don't want to have your doctor do it, or if your doctor doesn't want to do it. But Dr. Lyons-Weiler was saying that the dose, the amount of aluminum that is either absorbed into your body through your gut or injected directly into your bloodstream, the dose plus the genetic mutation does matter. There is so much scientific evidence, strong evidence for this. So, you know, it's unfortunately, I wish I could say, or I wish that science could say, that there's one gene that causes autism and we found it. And there is one ingredient that messes up this gene, and if you can avoid that, then your life will be fine. Unfortunately, it's looking more and more like there are many, many genes and many environmental triggers that can really start the fire for autism and so many other things. He mentioned multiple sclerosis and Alzheimer's several times during this presentation as well. So, acute exposure is more damaging than chronic exposure. So he's saying that the research is showing that, okay, so let's say you're taking your child in for vaccinations and they're going to receive their MMR and they're going to receive their, I don't know, what do they give? Tetanus or DTaP, which I think is tetanus, pertussis, and something else, maybe three. So that's like six different diseases that you're vaccinating for on one day. He's saying that that acute exposure or exposure on in one dose is showing to be more dangerous than, say, spacing those exposures out, because a little young child's body, their ability, their liver and their kidneys and all these lymph, you know, and all these things that help you detox your body are not as able to handle a big load like maybe an adult would. So he's saying that if you decide to give these vaccines, to try spacing them out as far as you can, to give the little baby or child's body the ability to completely do its job, to detoxify as well as it can before being exposed again, instead of like loading the bucket clear full on one day and then expecting the body to do its best in detoxifying these things before they start spilling out all over the body and finding great places to hide, is basically how he explained it. All right, so let's say it's too late. Let's say you've already been exposed, like I was as a kid. I was exposed to a lot of these vaccines. Not as many as they give now, but certainly a lot. Let's say you've been exposed. You think you're suffering maybe some chronic health, from some chronic health issues that could be related to buildup of toxic metals in your body. So how do you find out? Dr. Lyons-Weiler said that there's some nuances to this, because you could have two different people with the same amount of metal in their bodies, and you could do the same test to these two people, and one person will show on the test that there is an amount of metal and one won't. And that's because one person's body is trying to detoxify itself. So the metal's coming out. It's going to show up on a test. The other person Their body may not be trying to excrete this stuff, so it might just be sitting there and it's not accessible through a blood test or something like that. It could be hiding somewhere stationary in the body. So that's something to keep in mind. So I think what he was trying to allude to was that if you've been exposed, you should just go ahead and try to detox, especially if you're having chronic symptoms of metal toxicity. And again, use your search engine or look on PubMed or GreenMed Info for the symptoms of that. But I think these days we all know what they are. So there's a blood serum test. It's called a partial challenge test, and that's available through Great Lakes Labs. I think they have a website where you can buy that online, Great Lakes Labs. I think that you can pay for this out of pocket, or that somebody like Dr. Watts could probably order this test. You would probably have to talk to her, though. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think maybe she does that. There is a hair follicle test. He said that sometimes this is reliable if the metal ends up there. You know, like I said before, the metal can be hanging out anywhere in your body. Sometimes it hangs out in your hair follicles, so it'll come out in a hair test. So you can test your hair. So basically, you just want to assume that you have it. And the only way to measure metal toxicity accurately is through feces and urine. And evidently, it's really hard to test that. He didn't really give any suggestions as to how to do that. So again, I would probably talk to a naturopathic doctor, an integrative doctor, somebody like that, about if they know how to properly go about testing urine and feces for metal toxicity. He feels that that is the most accurate measure. So through all of this, I think the underlying theme was that he was not saying that vaccines necessarily have to be a bad thing. He's not against them, but he is really for responsible vaccine development, and this is what we really need right now. They're like with the HPV vaccine, we all know, everybody's heard about this, you know, how there was this court case that this young woman won because she was damaged by the HPV vaccine. People who go to court for vaccine injuries have to go to the vaccine court. The pharmaceutical company is never held responsible, and damages to people who are injured from a vaccine are always paid by public funds, which is you and me, through our taxes. Pharmaceutical companies and doctors never have to pay damages to patients who are harmed by these vaccines. So the HPV vaccine case is one of the first ever in a very long time to go to a real court of law and be tried. And the pharmaceutical company was found to have been negligent, and did have to pay for the young woman's health injuries. So we're getting there. I would like to see this grow. You know, I am all for health. Whatever we need to do to achieve ultimate health in life, I'm for that, you know? And if vaccines are part of that equation, great. Sign me up. But after my injury and everything that I've been learning, I am definitely skeptical about it. I'm not ashamed of asking questions. I don't think I'm a bad person. I definitely would never throw my child in front of a bus to save the hypothetical situation that other children might face someday. I know measles is not usually deadly. The flu is not usually deadly. Chickenpox is not usually deadly. Like, the only reason that these diseases are deadly is when they happen to children who are usually not strong health-wise anyway. So in my family, I'm pretty determined to keep my children as strong and healthy as they can, building up their own natural immunity as much as I can, and hoping and praying for the day that vaccines are safe. They're proven safe instead of testing them out on human beings the way that we are right now. I just don't want to see any more kids harmed, and I don't want anyone to go through what I went through when I was a teenager and into my adult life after my multiple dose acute exposure vaccine injury as a teenager. So that's why I'm interested in all of this, and I hope that I was able to convey some of this information accurately for you guys. I know it was a lot. If you would like to discuss this topic, please feel free to join our Facebook discussion page. It is a closed page. It's, the Thrive Tribe 419 discussion group. And the link for that is on our public page, Thrive Tribe 419 podcast on Facebook. So if you're interested in any of this information, feel free to post on there, and I would be happy to post information, links to things that I've read and looked at over the years. And this is not a new thing for me. I've been researching vaccines for about 10 years. So yeah, it's an interesting topic for sure, and definitely dividing people, but I don't think we need to be divided about it. We just need to learn how to have a conversation about it and not shame each other for our choices and for our skepticism. No matter which side of the fence you're on, going out and getting all the vaccines, not getting any, getting some, delayed schedule, whatever. There's no reason we can't talk about this, because I think with science, there's always room for improvement and growth. And like I said, the only way we can do this is to keep asking questions and keep talking and support scientists who are looking at these things and care about putting people first instead of money first. And I really feel that Dr. Lyons-Weiler is doing that. I think that there is a way to support his organization if you'd like to contribute to his work at IPAC, I-P-A-K, IPACKnowledge.org. There are two other really great organizations that in Ohio that are working on our behalf tirelessly for free every day, defending people who are being harassed, coerced, injured by the conventional medical practice. I'm not against doctors. I'm not against any of this. I just think that people's truth deserves to be heard, and we do deserve to be able to ask questions. So if you're interested in learning more about topics like medical freedom, medical price transparency, the whole healthcare insurance debate, all these things, you can go to Ohio Advocates for Medical Freedom. They have a Facebook page. They have a website. You can go to Health Freedom Ohio. Health Freedom Ohio also has a Facebook page, and I think that their website link is on there too. Both groups do political advocacy, they do education, they host these health directions series, conferences that are amazingly good, really informative. So if you're interested in any of that, visit some of those people and see what they're doing. A lot of them are working on our behalves every single day to give us the freedom to speak up for ourselves in our doctor's offices and be informed and be able to have a say in what happens to our minds and our bodies.
Thanks for listening to the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast. Do you know someone who could benefit from the information you just heard? Share the love by sharing this episode. Want to connect online? Check out thrivetribe419.com to leave a review or check out more episodes. You can also join the conversation by searching for Thrive Tribe 419 on Facebook or Instagram. See you next time. Keep thriving.